Sykes, and I'm with the Environmental Protection Agency's Aging Initiative. That's A-G-I-N-G. And I'm here to talk about our Building Healthy Communities for Active Aging. So how many of you have heard of the built environment before? Is that a new term?
Yeah,
that's what this is. So it's really where we live, where we work, where we shop, where we play. And we do know from many studies that have been done, we're learning more, that of course, where we live and where we work and where we play has an indirect and direct effect on our human health and the health of the environment. The National Research Council said that we ought to be looking at new ways of dealing with public health issues, not just focusing on the individual, but we ought to be identifying collective properties of social and physical environments that influence health and disease outcomes, and of course from the EPA, I'd say, and environmental outcomes. The consequences of sprawl are well documented. Again, we've had for years focusing on needing to help get the cars around the community, development patterns that actually have harmed the environment and also, I would argue, human health. I don't know how many of you used to walk to school when you were a kid. And anyone who has children or grandchildren, do they walk to the school now? Raise your hand if they still do. Okay, few. But you can see many people didn't raise their hand. Sprawl also is responsible when we build it out to the green pastures away from the centers of cities to increasing the amount of impervious surface that actually is a problem when we have storms, when we have lots of flooding, and all that runoff that can go through the fields where we've had pesticides and so forth that actually can get into the drinking water system. And then another problem of the impervious surfaces, too, has to do with heat islands, extreme heat during those really warm periods like we've seen in Chicago in the past, in Europe, and any urban area. The increased travel distances from home to work, getting to and from medical appointments, also contribute to a greater air pollution. And I'll just mention that the Urban Institute just did a big report on growing cooler, and one of their main findings had to do with having people work near where they live or live near where they work. And that's one of the principles of smart growth that I think we ought to be listening to, since we've got this huge problem that some countries and some states have taken leadership issues on addressing, but I think it's going to be up to people at the community and local level to address that. 40% of the worst emissions in urban areas are really due to mobile sources, which means cars and buses, and the transportation sector is the fastest growing contributor to CO2, and those of you who work in the aging field will know also, I'm sorry I'm speaking so fast for the signer here, that it's the fastest growing sector for the is transportation of the cars, contributor to greenhouse gases. So, does this look like some of the intersections in your home or someplace where you've ever been? I wouldn't want to be a driver in this community, and I sure wouldn't want to be a pedestrian or a biker. Since 1980, the number of miles Americans drive has grown 3 times faster than the population. I mean, one of the big impacts on the environment, we've said, has to do with the growing population. But here we can see it's actually also how we get around and how we do our business. Furthering making this worse has to do with the spread out development. Again, going to that last green field instead of working on the brown fields in our communities, developing what's the blighted parts of neighborhoods where people avoid or becomes a safety problem. And again, the RAND has looked at the broken window syndrome and about health outcomes there too. The projected 59% increase in total miles driven between 2005 and 2030 will overwhelm all of the gains that we are projecting for fuel-efficient cars. You know, we just can't get ahead. Again, I'm going to look at a community, and I wish I could tell you which city this was, but this is Dan Burden shared this photo. The pedestrian, I don't know if you can see, is in the middle of the screen at that crosswalk on these many lanes. And again, if you think of someone who can move at a regular pace, there's no lights there, so you can see to count down how long that person has to cross the street. But it looks like a pretty scary thing if you happen to live on one side of the street and the pharmacy or the senior center or your grandchild was on the other side of that street. Traffic injuries, 12% of the population is over 65. That was in 2005, but that year, older adults accounted for 15% of those traffic fatalities and 20% of all pedestrian fatalities. So those intersections and how we develop the built environment matters from a public health standpoint, too. So what is smart growth? How many people have heard of the term smart growth? God, Okay, who's for bad growth? Just raise your hand. Okay. Even the governor, well, I shouldn't say even, Governor Schwarzenegger is for smart growth. There's many states and some local leaders that are, you know, taking it seriously to be looking at how we develop and plan for the future. I know that you might have known that MetLife and N4A did a study recently looking to see how prepared our communities were for an aging society, and unfortunately, it was less than half that even had even thought about how they were designing communities. So I think there's an awful lot of work to go. But smart growth is characterized by development patterns that create attractive, distinctive, walkable communities that give people of varying ages and wealth and physical ability a range of safe, affordable, convenient choices in where they live and how they get around. Now, doesn't that sound good? Is that where you'd like to live? I mean, that's where I'd like to live. Here, I won't go through all the principles of smart growth, but for about 10 years, there's been many NGOs that have been working to address the built environment and how one goes about addressing those key issues in how one plans involves incorporating all of these principles to making a difference. And I would argue, too, that we believe that these are the same principles that will also make it a livable community for people of all ages, including older adults. And I'll just give an example and one that we definitely have been focusing on in building healthy communities for active aging, but creating walkable neighborhoods, for example. But all these other things do contribute to healthy communities. For instance, if you have zoning that prohibits people from having commercial and housing in the same community, you may not then have transportation to those services. In other words, you couldn't walk out your door and go to the local pharmacy. You have to get in your car to go. And a new website, I think it's called walk.com, and I'll double check that, but actually you can put in your zip code, your address, and see what your walk score is. It's called walkscore.com. And you can, for example, the White House, Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., has a really good high walk score. It's like Utopia. But where Bill Gates lives and the Crawford Ranch in Texas have under 10 score, which means you basically can't go out to any amenity that you would need on a daily basis and get there without getting into a car because it's miles and miles and miles away. So again, smart growth also ensures that we use existing resources in an efficient way, how we build new buildings. And would you believe that two-thirds of what's built in America is going to be rebuilt by 2050? And we have an opportunity now to do it the right way as opposed to doing it the wrong way. But I think that these principles really have not just, they don't just lend us an opportunity to do it right, but I think it really requires us to do it right because of the fact that we also have a growing segment of our population that's much more susceptible to environmental hazards because of just their age. Changing households, how we, again, develop where we live, and zoning issues can get into this, too. And I don't know if any of you are members of NCOA, but they just recently had a big story on co-housing, which was a movement that started in Denmark. But, homes with kids in 1960, 48% of all the homes in the United States had children in them in 1960. By 2030, we're seeing that number drop down to 27%. But you'll also see this other column on the right-hand side, single people living in homes, again, growing dramatically, threefold since 1960. And here's the statistics from the Interagency Forum on Aging-Related Statistics. Again, if you're a single woman over 75, you're often living alone as opposed to if you were a man aged 65 to 75. So, what can a government and a private sector partnership do to encourage healthy communities for older adults? Anyone have the answer? Anyone wonder with the title? This is what you can do. You can have building a healthy community for active aging. And I want to say that there are many partners in the room that we'll be talking here today that have come together because we said we've got to take it to the next level. We brought together the U.S. EPA, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the President's Council for Fitness and Sports, a wonderful organization called the National Blueprint that brings together 50 organizations or plus that address physical activity programs for older adults, the Center for Healthy Aging at the National Council on the Aging, and Active for Life, which is funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, that Marsha Ori is going to help us be the disseminator with great examples of model programs with the successful award program that I'll be talking about. So we decided this a few years ago because we had common goals of saying we've got to figure a new way of not just creating new little programs, but a way that we can, again, take it to the community level, build it into our planning development that takes decades of planning to get into the right place. We wanted to raise awareness in communities about the importance of those smart growth principles that I have more information, if you'd like, at the end of where to go to learn more about each one of those 10 principles, and about active lifestyles for older adults. And again, the NCOA, I know, will be talking about some of the evidence-based practices that we know about already. And we also had an assessment tool that we were hoping was going to be something that we could collect nationally, but unfortunately, the Office of Management and Budget did not think it was in the government's interest to collect that information. So now we'll just have to do it a different way to get that information out. But we do have what we call a smart tool, 20 questions on the website that were developed to assess how a community is working towards building a healthy community for active aging. And we think it only takes 15 minutes because we did pilot test it in communities around the country. Here are some of our supporters of building healthy communities for active aging, and I think you'll see that it's quite a diverse group of people, everyone from the AARP to the Erickson Foundation, N4A. We also have the American Society on Aging, many of who's who in the aging world as well as in public health, including APHA. So you probably know about active aging, but basically older adults that regularly participate in structured and unstructured physical activities is what we're talking about with active aging. These activities should emphasize increasing endurance, strength, flexibility, and balance. And I won't steal thunder because I think other people will be talking about this stuff, but one important benefit of physical activity has to do with really addressing many, many, many common chronic conditions that show up in older adults. Again, arthritis, hypertension, heart disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma, all these conditions can be improved with moderate exercise on a regular basis. And mental health is another benefit of regular exercise. Many people who have those chronic conditions are also on multiple medications. Just to show that that's another issue we have to address. So with these people that have all these chronic conditions, many people also, again, could benefit from this physical activity. So we think this is really a smart thing from an economic standpoint, from addressing healthcare costs and quality of life. And I'll just bring in the EPA's piece and our Interagency Forum on Aging-Related Statistics. We have a statistic that talks about the percentage of people living in counties with poor air quality. And in 2006, that's 34% of the population over 65 lived in a county with poor air quality at one time. And particulate matter and ozone are the most important air quality issues that can shorten people's lives, and especially people at risk who have underlying chronic conditions such as heart disease, diabetes, asthma, and COPD. The numbers are enormous when you look at the economic burden from these diseases that, again, can be exacerbated by air pollution. And this was from the Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute in 2002. $250 billion is spent on all those conditions. And again, we know that air pollution can exacerbate or kill you. And I'm sure you may have seen this statistic a few years ago, but all the leading causes of death in the United States in disability include chronic diseases. They account for 70% of all the deaths in the United States. That's about 1.7 million each year. And they're the most costly, but also something that we can prevent. And that's why we're working again on this Building Healthy Communities for Active Aging. This is like that flat line you see at a hospital when people die. This is our improvement. And I think there's some pockets of hope from some of the activities that have happened around the country. But, you know, as we get older, the percentage of people engaged or report, this is from the National Center for Health Statistics National Health Interview Survey, who report engaging in regular activity. And again, with increasing age, we see even less people over 85 years of age. It's less than 10%. However, it's only 30% for people age 45 to 64. We have to do better. And again, this is just, again, making that same point. The costs of inactivity are great, but again, the opportunities to do better is really important. And that's what we're trying to do, again, with Building Healthy Communities for Active Aging. We want to engineer back in people's lives walking, something that just was taken away when we discovered the car. So walking and jogging trails are the most important amenity, according to the National Association of Home Builders, for older adults when they're buying a home. Number one thing. So you'd think that we'd have this everywhere, right? Like in Florida? So going back to, again, the benefits that really help both the environment, from a sustainability of the environment, as well as for sustainability part on quality of life and well-being for older adults. Smart growth can build, can reduce air pollution, can lessen water pollution, which has drinking water issues and implications. It can reduce sprawl, less time in traffic. We've had tons of studies about stress and heart attacks, too. And create more open space, you know, quality of life. They've got states now saying leave no child left inside because kids are sitting with computers. So I think that those benefits are well understood. Again, I think you know very well, again, promoting physical activity, you know, what the benefits are from what I just mentioned. I'm just going to quickly, because I know I don't have a lot of time, but I'll just say these questions are all up on our website, Active for Life's, the network, as well as the EPA's Aging Initiative. But we said, here's some things that if you take a continuum of starting to get working on this issue to I've already got a model program, starting with smart growth, we figure these are all silos where we work in, but if we bring them together, we can really make a big difference. So the first question is, our community has defined goals or a mission for advancing or applying smart growth? Not at all, partially, fully completed. Now we have our community governing body that's conducted an assessment, you know, to see whether or not we're doing smart growth. Has my community done this? Not at all, partially, fully. Now, has our community defined goals or a mission for increasing older adult participation in active aging physical activity? Not at all, partially, fully, and you get the point. Then we start linking these issues as we move down the continuum. Linking, formulating plans and strategies for linking smart growth with physical activity. And then we create pilots, and at the end, we have an existing model program for integrating active aging, physical activity, and smart growth for older adults. And we can provide technical assistance and a contact person to share information with other communities. And that's kind of our learning network that Marsha's going to be spearheading through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. So we are looking for you guys. Let's just put it that way. So now here's just a few things where, in the right time, for not a lot of money, you can make an enormous difference. I don't know if you see this intersection, again, a kind of scary place if I'm the driver, a biker, or a walker. There is one walker there on that corner. But look what a difference some paint can do. I now know where I should cross, and maybe the cars would see me when I'm in that crosswalk. And now it looks like a nice place where I'd even want to go walking. I'll go back. You see that? This is where we started. Pretty nice, huh? And that didn't take an awful lot. It took a little bit of trees and paint. And I think this is in Florida, Naples, Florida, where those great sidewalks are very visible for that amenity that's most wanted by older adults. Oh, I guess it's not there. But it could be. Not bad. And I did mention WalkScore about the addressing whether or not amenities are nearby and you can get there by foot, or whether you have to get in your car to get there. So that's one resource on walkability. Feet First also has walking audits. It's one resource. I'm sure there's a number of resources out there for people to actually canvas their neighborhoods and find out whether or not it is a walkable place or where they need to make some repairs and bring it to the attention of local planners that could put that in the top priority list of things to work on right now. And that could also include when we look at the neighborhoods and how we create communities where people want to get outdoors and livable communities. Do we have countdown crosswalks? And if we don't have a crosswalk going down, you know, counting down how many seconds we have to get across the street, do we have some big orange flags? Some cities around the country have just used orange flags to help let motorists know that a pedestrian's crossing the street. So these are some resources. I'll just mention the World Health Organization, who's often focused on children, recently did a global age-friendly cities report where they went to 33 cities around the world and found out what the barriers were by asking older adults what the issues were. And it's things that aren't surprising that we've talked about with the smart growth principles. It has to do with having benches where people can rest, having safe places, well lit, having sidewalks where you can actually walk. And then I mentioned the Urban League that did the study about, again, where people live needing to be nearby where they work. And I'll just say for all of the people who are going to be caring for the caregivers for us and our parents, you know, if they can't get to work and get nearby, you know, that's going to be a major problem. So I think the affordable housing issue is really important for the aging population too. We have a listserv, and you're more welcome to join, that gives out monthly publications about funding opportunities as well as new research around environmental health issues. We'll definitely always keep you up to date on the Building Healthy Communities. And we have an awards program that's going to be an annual event where communities can apply to be recognized by the EPA as a healthy community for active aging. And our first set of applicants have come in, and they will be announced. The winners will be announced in February. And again, this will be an annual basis. And the one piece that we included in there was that you have to have a letter of support from your area agency on aging. So at least the planners have to at least make that connection to be recognized as a healthy community for active aging. So that's it. Thanks.